Nya nya nya. Ba. Mba. Babwe. Zimbabwe. The broken Bunsen burner burns so bright. South.
Jamie.
Southeast Asian Peninsula.
Hey, Jamie.
Yes.
I think the only line we need from you today is drivers who switch to Progressive could save big.
Cool. I just got to finish my warm-ups. Foul, foul, throw in the towel. History, history.
Switch
history,
to Progressive history, today.
Santa ski slalom in a salmon skin suit.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Delhi Decoded. I'm Pritika Khanna, your host, and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode we pick a pin code from Delhi and dive into the most famous buildings, landmarks, and stories from that pin code. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some very special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry, I'll help you get a peek into the pulse of Delhi.
Hamari apni Delhi.
While all of us were locked inside our homes during a nationwide lockdown, Yamuna River in Delhi was seeing changes that most of us had never seen before. If someone mentions the river Yamuna, the first pictures that pass through my mind are of a dark, almost black-colored water body which has white foam coming out of it. But this was not the case in March this year. Photographs were circulated from Delhi's 11006 where the Yamuna from the ghat looked clearer on its own almost. Some estimates say that it was clearer by almost 33% during lockdown. Could it be because of industries not functioning? Or was it that water flow was being maintained? There have been many attempts over various decades to clean the river. Governments have come up with rejuvenation plans, but little can really be seen on the ground. Years later, more than 50% of untreated sewerage waste goes directly into the river. I have with me Dr. Suresh Kumar Rohila, who is the Program Director for Water Program at the Center for Science and Environment. He's going to help me understand the rejuvenation process, what happens to all the waste that goes into the river, and how the river suddenly became clean. Thank you so much for joining us on Delhi Decoded, Dr. Rohila.
Thank you, Pritika, for inviting me.
So, starting off, rejuvenation of River Yamuna has been something that has been talked about for many years. According to you, what is it that actually, you know, what does it take to rejuvenate a river?
Yes, as you correctly say, Pratika, rejuvenation has been talked about for a long time. And it is not as simple as that, you know, you actually needed only a lockdown for this to happen. It is a complex web of the systems which extract water, give back sewage to this river, and inadequate capacities of sewage treatment and all those things, as well as industries which contribute to pollute the river. So there is a right balance which is required, and adequate provisions for treating of, you know, industrial sewage, industrial waste, and the sewage which goes into the river. I think these are the critical complex interfaces which needs to be handled appropriately to rejuvenate the river.
Do you think that enough efforts are being made currently to make that happen?
I actually would say no. The efforts are not being done. It is just a piecemeal approach which the government has taken, and it is only a hardware and infrastructure approach, which also, in spite of considerable evidence saying that the hardware engineering approach has not worked for long, there has been not much change in the focus of the officials or the agencies which are responsible for reviving the river.
So there's also a similar plan that is actually one of the most ambitious plans that the central government came up with in 2014, which was to clean River Ganga. Do you think that a similar approach is also being taken when it comes to the rejuvenation of that river?
I think, Yamuna is a tributary of Ganga, and any learnings of any plan of River Ganga rejuvenation should also be taken up not only in Yamuna but all other places. But the question arises that how far and how adequate is the new packaging, what is called the new plan which came up in 2014 for Revive Ganga. So Ganga revival efforts have been there over more than a decade, and so I think I would say two decades now. However, there has not been much success, because the same thing what I mentioned, that in a Yamuna revival and pollution control board, the same old wine and new packaging has been there, that, you know, new bottle has come in the form of, you know, we have talked about hardware approach still, and the focus is on treatment. But some signs have very recently started coming up that due to the pressures from non-governmental agencies and, you know, some learnings, there are some signs visible that there is more holistic, integrated approach which is acceptable to national mission Kyun Ganga.
Okay.
And which is a good sign, I would say.
Taking on, what would be a whole integrated approach that's needed for cleaning the river? Like an ideal
approach is that, you know, there are different sectors which require water, and there are different sectors which also dispose of different kind of waste. It is not just the industrial waste, it is not just the urban waste, it is also the agricultural waste also. The runoff from the agriculture also might be polluting the river. For example, extensive use of fertilizers might also end up flushing of fertilizer related contaminants into the river. And there is also a connection between the groundwater and the river water. So they all act as a recharge and discharge zone. So similarly, when industries withdraw water from the river, they use the water in the industrial processes. However, if there are effluent treatment plants which have been in place are not working and there is no control mechanisms on them, they end up polluting the river. Similarly is for the cities. Cities extract huge amount of water for drinking purposes and non-potable water drinking purposes, and they end up disposing of sewage into that, untreated sewage. So it is not just that you should have a treatment system, but you should also have adequate conveyance system for bringing the waste from variety of sources. For example, in the city, these sources could be each and every household, each and every school, each and every market. Similarly, for industries, it would be each and every big industry, small industry, medium industry, as well as the household industry. So it may be an industry in a house, but it will be generating industrial waste. So if that waste goes into the domestic sewage conveyor system, that might create problems for the sewage treatment plants, which are basically designed for handling only the domestic sewage. So that's why you understand that how important and how integrated the issues are, and why the need for a more holistic and integrated, approach to river rejuvenation.
That's very interesting. In the beginning, this year has been seen very unprecedented situations, but in the initial month of 5 weeks of lockdown, there were photos that were being shared all across social media, which showed a very clean Yamuna, with industries being shut down, which also are a major contributor which flow directly into the river. Do you think it was, visually we could see that the river was clean, but was that really the case?
I would say the pollution in the river is not just because there are huge quantities of waste being generated. It is also because the river does not have adequate flow, because there is a huge demand for water and a lot of water is extracted from the river. So it is only the sewage or the industrial waste which flows into the river. So what happened during the lockdown was that these organized households, as well as organized industry, as well as unorganized unauthorized colonies, as well as, the unauthorized industries. So everywhere across the sector, there was a reduced demand of extraction of water from the river, which resulted in more supply of flow or more flow into the river, which resulted in actually dilution of the water, which was of the waste which was flowing into the river, which resulted in the per liter available toxins were reduced. One was visually it looked good, it didn't smell that bad. And then comes to the testing. If you see on the testing part, it was very clearly visible, saying that though there was enough water, however, and also because industries were not operating, so industrial effluent had reduced. However, cities were generating or continued to generate sewage, as well as the households which were not connected to the piped sewage system. The septic tank waste or, the nalas from those colonies continued to dump huge amounts of fecal waste or, other kind of waste into the river. So people continued to live. They continued to flush toilets. They continued to, use urinals, to use wash basins, use kitchen waste. In fact, I would even say that more pharmaceutical waste would have been added because of this COVID situation into the thing, because a lot of people were using a lot of, water was also used every household. Like if everybody was using 10 liter more water for washing hands. So more and more water was used, and then that was generating more and more sewage also. Because since March, everybody has been told, wash your hands 5 times.
Everyone's been washing more.
Yeah. And everybody's washing clothes also. When you come back from your office or when you come back to home, if you were washing, using it two times, now you're using it only one time, your clothes, and washing it. There has been a considerable increase in the quantum of wastewater generated. Wastewater is one is which is a gray water, which comes from toilets and kitchens, because many people were staying at home. They were spending more time at those places, as well as the toilet usage, you know, black water.
So that was diluting the...
I would say the industry not picking up the water was increase, was the cause for the flow in the river, enhanced flow. However, there was an enhancement of the sewage generation, because there was people were living in the households and they were continuing to use toilets and use their facilities, water facilities, which was generating more and more wastewater. Overall, there was a dilution because of more water available in the river. There was no enhanced capacity of sewage treatment or industrial treatment during this lockdown.
But if you had to pin the blame on somebody, do you think the larger problem comes from industrial waste, or is it that domestic sewage that contributes to the problem?
I think it is not that easy to say. Certainly, industry has highly toxic materials which do create visuals which show that, you know, looks good, bad, and you know there is a foaming in the river which attracts attention of media. However, there is a pathogens which are there in the river due to the you know microbes which contaminate the water, which creates waterborne diseases and which is also unsafe for human consumption, which may not look good for, like it may not be black water in that sense, but it will be not good for human health because it consists of pathogens and microbes. So it is both they contribute. But visually, it is the industrial wastewater that instead of blue or you know green water, you will find black water or pink water due to the industrial processes, whichever industry is in the catchment of the river. So industrial water is certainly toxic, but with regard to the domestic sewage, I can tell you one thing is that a river and the flow in the river also has a natural cleansing velocity. When the water with biological contaminants like sewage and other things, river has enough flow, it also gets clean on its own because there are there is sun rays falling, there is undulations in the flow channels. So there is a self-cleansing velocity, they call. If there is a velocity in the water, it also has capacity to clean itself. So nature also rejuvenates, or river also rejuvenates itself. However, when the flow diminishes, because there is an over-extraction of water for agricultural as well as industrial purposes, and this has been always an issue saying that there is no formula that, you know, how much water should be left in the, into the river. Environmentalists have said that 30 to 40% of the flow of one given point of time should continue to be in the river. But however, there is no such mechanism to stop extraction of water from the river. Only the minimum flow is left, not the environmental flow. So the river's natural cleansing velocity is reduced to zero in a normal situation when cities, industries are working, agriculture is at full swing, and human habitations are needing water. So, but during lockdown, several factors like industry and agriculture, there was a reduction in the demand and there was an increase in natural cleansing velocity due to the enhanced flow as well as due to the more water being available into the river.
Okay. But what about external cleansing? So in terms of sewage treatment capacity, do you think Delhi has enough capacity? If yes, if no, then how much does it need to be scaled up?
I think there's a huge demand supply gap and the treatment capacity is inadequate. And in fact, 35% of national capital area, the Delhi area, are not even covered by sewerage system. They continue to generate waste in the from the on-site containment system, which is called septage or fecal sludge, which is taken out by desludgers in tankers, which are called honeysuckers. And then they are taken out and dumped into the nalas or, you know, river into the river directly or into the land environment, which contaminates the water and land environment. So 35% of the national capital still has fecal sludge, inadequate fecal sludge management. The existing sewage treatment plants are meeting only 60-70%. They are designed for treating only the 60-70% of the total covered areas with sewer network. And there has been again and again every month or every 6 months when the reports are given by Pollution Control Board, it has been found that the plants do not function to the desired standards and the permissible standards from the regulatory agencies. So they have been failing at various accounts due to the power failure or due to the, you know, technology choices which have been made. Or so I think there are there is inadequate capacity of treatment which is in Delhi, as well as 35% of people depending on on-site sanitation system, inadequate sludge management and dumping of fecal sludge into the river and tributary and nalas and stormwater drains ultimately goes to the river and contaminates the river.
So essentially a large part of waste is essentially going untreated directly into the river even today.
Yes, and I think in 2016-17 CSC has done a study and we found that there were around 400 such unauthorized illegal desludgers which were operating, and this is an informal economy which functions, and they are not being even recognized by the system that they cater to these 35% of the population all over in peri-urban areas, even adjacent urban areas like in South Delhi. There is a huge population which remains in unauthorized colonies. So these 400 trucks are actually desludging operators are actually emptying the septic tanks and taking out you know, fecal sludge and dumping anywhere and everywhere in the land and water environment. So each truck is doing even two trips a day, two or three trips, then you have 1,000 trucks of fecal sludge which is being dumped into the water bodies and land. And if you really see the difference between the direct sewage from the household and the fecal sludge, the difference is that the sewage from every house, from the toilets, would have a BOD of 150 to 200, which need to be brought down to 30 BOD, which is acceptable standard by a regulatory agency. But the waste coming from septic tank is as high as 3,000 BOD to 5,000 BOD. So, which is a highly toxic and lethal waste, which finds its way into the river environment. So these are several complex situations of sanitation which have remained outside the purview of agencies which are solely talking about hardware approach. There has been NGT committee which is monitoring the pollution control efforts on Yamuna, and we have made submissions to this committee and we have submitted the evidence saying about these 400 trucks, desludging trucks, dumping waste into the tributaries of Yamuna and Yamuna itself. And they have had difficulty in finding that which department is actually responsible for giving licenses to these desludgers, and whether it's the Delhi Jal Board or the Urban Development Department. So, they are not able to fix the accountability. But I can say is that before lockdown, I am informed that there was a process of licensing of desludgers which was started, and there were around 100, which is 25% of these desludgers which were licensed. However, remaining desludging vehicles were working in unauthorizedly. And this process also resulted in 75 or 80 such locations being identified where these desludgers, whether they were registered or not registered, they were given an option that they should go not dump the waste anywhere, but they should take it to these disposal sites such that at least it can go to a defined place. However, due to the lockdown, what happens was there was no enforcement on this. And actually, even the NGT committee became lenient on this, and because everybody said it is COVID and difficult situation. So there has been no enforcement by the DMs or district collectors in Delhi on these desludgers, and they have continued to function, empty the septic tanks and dump the waste anywhere and wherever they want. There have not been many penalties which have been issued to such unauthorized desludgers dumping waste anywhere. So at one point of time, there was also, before lockdown, there were also reports saying that, you know, how many trucks were coming and how many metric tons of, you know, fecal sludge was basically treated. How many million liters of fecal sludge was at least co-treated or co-dumped into the sewage. But during the COVID time, even that follow-up is not happening currently. So we are back to square one. So because under the pretext of COVID and the COVID responses, where municipal agencies struggle to meet their other, requirements. Yeah, so people are not focusing on the pollution abatement of the river on these accounts.
I think it's just one more thing added to the list of things that has been pushed back because of the pandemic.
In fact, 35% of the pollution load is not even counted as a pollution load. Only recently I found that now when things have started opening up, I found that Delhi government has issued an order saying that every house, which in spite of even if they are not connected, will have to pay a pollution cess. Even if you do not have a sewer network, you would have to pay a certain amount of money, which was just reported a week back into the newspapers. Now it is to see now that if the money is collected, then whether there would be free services provided by Delhi Jal Board, who has issued this order to the households which are not connected by sewer network, that they would take their waste from their septic tanks and dispose it off safely. So this is yet to see. So they have started collecting, they have done a notification that they would collect money from houses which are not even connected to sewer network under the polluter-based principle. However, this is yet to see the impact on the ground.
So according to you, do you think imposing a cess is an effective way of getting things done? And because, people tend to have this to get a lot of bad publicity also for something that may be a good initiative, but cess is like an additional burden of sorts.
See, I would say, in fact, Delhi has a policy on free water actually. So if you see 20,000 liters free water, but then water production is cheaper than sewage treatment. If you really see, sewage treatment is at least 4 times more costlier. So you may give water free, but you should certainly, somebody has to pay for the sewage treatment or sanitation facilities. Otherwise, the quantum of risks or public health problems will continue to increase. You may have right to water, but you don't have right to pollute. You will have to understand that if you are polluting the environment, if you do not have access to, organized sewer network, and if you have decided to live even in an unauthorized colony, then you should not create such situations which become a public health nuisance. So even so, if the government collects the money, then one can always put pressure on the government that they are also responsible for providing facilities for that. Not necessary that they would be provided the same kind of sewer network, but they could they would be provided safe and hygiene surroundings and sanitation. So sewerage is not sanitation. Sanitation is sanitized environment and surroundings. So so at least the mindset would change from sewerage to sanitation. Sewerage is just hardware, laying down of pipe network. And otherwise then the option is that first you have to wait for that the remaining 35% of the city of Delhi would have to be first sewer network to make it clean. So, which may not happen till 2050 also, because the city also keep on growing. And by the time you reach with the pipe to the existing demand supply gap areas, the city would have grown further. So these are going to be challenging situations. So there will have to be hybrid systems of areas covered with centralized sewer network, as well as areas which are not covered by centralized sewer system, provided with sanitation facilities through adequate fecal sludge management, such that the domestic sewage does not find its way into the river as well as land and contaminating the groundwater and surface water.
So there's still a lot that needs to be done.
Long way to go. And actually, in big cities, it's a big challenge because the agencies, when they see that sanitation as an infrastructure issue, they always like big projects. But the small solutions like sanitation and emptying of septic tank every household does not attract their attention. And it is out of sight, out of mind. And the unauthorized colonies are not even on the radar. They don't even recognize the role of even the unauthorized desludgers who, whatever way, at least they are cleaning the immediate vicinity. They might be disposing of anywhere, but if the utilities and agencies provide them an adequate place, then they should see them as partners in the problem solving rather than unauthorized service providers. For example, today, if you see municipal waste collecting truck, solid waste collecting truck, collects it from the dhalaos. However, there is an unauthorized informal solid waste collection mechanism which exists in cities. There is a contractor who hires some unauthorized, informal workers who collect waste from every household. They charge you 30, 40 rupees, and then they sell the economic value waste out of the waste collected from your house. But the solid waste, which does not have any value, goes to the landfill. So in solid waste, this is visible and this is getting recognized. There was a time that 10, 15 years ago, people used to think that these people are informal rag pickers, are all thief, and, you know, they are pickpockets, or, you know, they are people who create crime, you know, who are behind the crimes. But they're also the solutions to many of the city's problem. They are actually the waste collectors. They are basically the solutions to the existing complex urban scenario which is there today. And at a very low cost, you are getting a service that somebody, you are actually the waste creator, and they are the waste problem solution providers actually. They take away waste, they segregate it, and they recycle some part of that waste, and remaining waste goes to the landfill. So it is very important that the city recognizes the role of different players, the government agencies as well as the non-government agencies. The private sector and the communities and RWAs also play an important role, and they should be assigned certain responsibilities in the provision of hygiene, sanitation, infrastructure, and public health. They should act as watchdog. It should not be just the pollution control board.
I think many a times it's something because we don't see on a day-to-day basis, people tend to forget, but it definitely plays a key role in all our daily lives.
Even if we see, we don't know, where do we have to go to say that if there might be a phone number and the person would say, I have many other priorities. The zonal engineer's number would be given there, but then there has to be a mechanism where these things are recorded. If you see a lot of littering all along the road during the Swachh Bharat mission, this provision was made that there was a Twitter handle, there was a grievance mechanism, that number of complaints received. Similarly, there should be a well-advertised, sensitized communities, RWAs, which keep an eye in their surroundings that, you know, these de-sludging trucks are not emptying waste anywhere and everywhere, which contaminates the surroundings and contaminates the water, which comes back to them in the form of groundwater or in the form of source of water supply. So it should not be just left to an institution called Delhi Jal Board or a municipality. In fact, a municipality doesn't have much role into water supply and sewerage network. It is the Delhi Jal Board. So the whole institutionalization of water and sanitation services has resulted in individual households only a subscriber. They are not partners into a complex water and sanitation scenario where each and every individual has to play an important role. Starting from when you open the tap, that you consume less water or you save water. That while brushing your teeth, you have to close the tap such that you don't consume or waste water. Similarly, when you are shaving, you should not leave the tap open. Or if you have a high water consuming flushing system, then you should change your flushing system, because every step you are going to reduce the quantum of sewage getting generated in the city. If you have a high water consuming washing machine, so that role is totally finished. You know, some of similar kind of developments have happened in energy sector, and I hope that in coming 2 or 3 years we should soon do these things in the water and sanitation sector. For example, today you would see that in the electricity sector, you would see you can take your old bulb and in exchange from electricity department you can get CFL or LED lights at a discounted price, or you would get a discount on 5-star ACs. BSES would give you 20-30% discount. Similarly, there has to be incentivization of, if you use less water or conserve water, then you would be incentivized for that, because you are reducing the total load of pollution which the civic agencies are not able to manage or treat or handle. So this whole process in energy, it has started happening in the electricity sector, but in the water and sanitation still it is yet to see. 10 years ago in the electricity sector, it was, all these situations you would have seen, power failure, power breakdown, But now people have started. If they see economic value, they pay for the electricity, you know. Earlier, free electricity means no electricity. Similarly, as you are asking that question, whether people should pay. If people don't pay, then either somebody will have to pay or there will be no service to them.
True. Well, given the shortages we are facing on the waterfront, I hope changes are on their way sooner or later. Thank you so much for giving us so much insight on this, Dr. Rohila.
Thank you, Prithvi. I hope you got your answers all.
That's all from me this week. I'll be back next week with a new PIN code. Until then, please like, subscribe, and share this episode. We're always looking to hear your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HT Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Prithika Khanna. Thank you so much for joining in. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and healthy.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.